order. We are still missing one commissioner, but we have a quorum. And today's meeting of the Arkansas Independent Citizens Commission. My name is Annabelle Embertuck. I had the unfortunate privilege of being elected the chair of this commission last week, and Tommy May was fortunately elected the vice chair. I do want to welcome a new member of our commission, Frank Gwynn, and thank him for joining us in this endeavor. You probably didn't think you'd get as much handouts as you did over the last 2 weeks, but that's the job we have. So I'd like to be sure that we have Budget Director Robert Breck. Is Robert? Thank you. Thank you. And Dr. Scott Graves. Thank you. Thank you. I will say we, based upon a conversation with Marty Sullivan, decided we didn't need him to come forward. He indicated that Dr. Graves could handle everything for the AOC. So let's move to the second item on the agenda, which is the approval of the minutes for September 30. All of the documents that we are going to be referring to have been posted on the public web. Hi, welcome. Thank Annabelle Embertuck, Mr. Smith. Great. If you'll have a seat here. And we now welcome Clark Smith and welcome you to the commission. And going on with the approval of the minutes, I'll entertain a motion, or if you have corrections, please so indicate.
Make a motion for approval.
Second.
Okay, that will be a motion and a second. Any discussion? If there is no discussion, I will ask for an indication on the vote of approving. Please vote yes if you approve.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Please vote no if you do not approve. Unanimously approved the minutes for the September 30 meeting. Now, what I'd like us to do is, we did not have this discussion at the last meeting, which I realized after we had adjourned we should have. When I first joined the commission, we had a discussion as to whether commissioners would want a stipend for each appearance at the commission. As I recall, in the past, it's been like $65 or something like that. So I wanted to bring that to the floor and find out what the desire, the consensus of the group is on having each of us paid a stipend for each appearance.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to be on the record that I would oppose receiving any kind of compensation for our service for the state of Arkansas on this commission.
Okay. Would you like to make that a motion?
Yes. Madam Chairman, I'd like to move that the Independent Citizens Commission receive no stipend or any payment thereof for our service to the state.
Thank you.
Second.
And there's a second. And by Tommy May. Any discussion? No further discussion. I will call for the vote. All in favor of the motion as seconded, please vote yes.
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 Yes. All in opposed to the motion, please vote no. That will be passed unanimously. Thank you. Now I would like to call on Mr. Robert Brecht to come forward and have a chair. I know you're way far down at the end, but
I'm there if you'd like.
You know, that's okay, whichever you prefer. We do want you to turn on your mic, bring it close to your mouth, so this is being recorded, and we would like to have everybody be able to appear. As I mentioned in the agenda, we understand that Dr. Shelnut could not be here today, and so he suggested that, as budget director, you probably know as much as he knows about forecasting, etc. And we have been given the opportunity ahead of time to review documents that were sent to us. Would you like to make any opening remarks about the state revenue and budget? And then we'll open the floor to questions.
Sure, I'd be glad to. I'm very comfortable down here. I spent many, many years testifying at this end of the table in the Public Health Committee, which meets in this room. So, thank you very much for having me. My name is Robert Breck. I'm the State Budget Director. I can assure you I don't know as much about forecasting as Dr. Shelnut does. It's very kind of him to say that. I can tell you about the current forecast, which you've been provided. It's we were looking at roughly a $900 million surplus in FY23. And FY23 goes from July 1st of 22 till June 30th of next year. We were looking right around a $900 million surplus. Because of the tax cuts that were done in a special session in December, I believe, that's been decreased by about $500 million. So currently we're still looking at around roughly a $400 million surplus. Just to give you some perspective, at the end of FY21, it was roughly $1 billion surplus. Last year was a record surplus of $1.628 billion. Mm-hmm. So we are enjoying surpluses at the moment. As many of you are aware, there are talks about a recession, there are talks about a downturn. There is some concern that if there is a downturn at the same time that the tax cuts do take effect, and with the increase in spending that looks like will be proposed in the next session, that future budget surpluses probably won't be what they are today. Okay. But currently we are very fortunate to have those budget surpluses. I say fortunate, I think in a way it's a curse. I feel a little bit like the family member that won the lottery and everybody wants more money. But we are fortunate that we have that. I don't know if you meet annually or biannually.
Well, we meet basically every year if we have a request in writing from any of the constitutional officers.
Well, generally the state does everything on a biennium basis. So just to let you know, at the end of June 30th, 2021, state employees were given a 3% raise on average. And then there was a 2% cost of living increase that was sort of an anomaly. That provision isn't used very often and will never be used again because it's been taken out of the code. But I believe that was in February, the governor granted a 2% cost of living increase for state employees. And then on June 30th of this year, there was an average of 5% for state employees, just to give you that perspective. Now, something that also may be of interest to you, I'm not sure how this will play out, but it was presented to the Personnel Committee, I believe it was last week. Mm-hmm. There is a new pay plan that's being proposed for state employees. State employees are based on a grid, based on what grades they are, mm-hmm. and there are different classifications depending, different ones for medical, different for IT, different for senior executive staff. But all of those tables that's being proposed, the new pay plan, those would all be increased a significant amount. 20% is what was presented to the Personnel Committee. Nothing's been finalized yet. We don't know what the end result of that will be. But our Office of Personnel Management did feel like that our pay scales, they have fallen behind by that amount. They do studies based on different job classifications, but different jobs compared to the private sector and compared to government employees in surrounding states. And so that there is a proposal to raise those by 20%, just to give you that perspective. Other than that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you have.
You've given some good meat for the discussion. Now, this 20% is an average, right? It's not necessarily each position.
Actually, each grade, it may be an average, but yeah. if you look at the table, and I could send you copies
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, that would be good.
Public information now. But I think the entry salary for each grade is going up 20%, okay. And I think even the maximums are going up 20%.
Okay.
If not, it's extremely close to that in all the different categories.
But that would be for when someone gets hired first,
that's correct.
And then a higher maximum for those who are already tenured.
That is correct. The other portion of that, though, that may be of interest, there will also be a, because in the last pay plan, the same type of adjustment to the grid occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when you do that, an existing employee that maybe has been there for 10 years,
yeah.
I'll just give you an example, they're making $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
They, because of merit increases, they're up to $35,000. You change the pay grid and you do a 20% to the 30, and all of a sudden the entry person's making 36, and it is true that that person gets bumped up to the minimum,
yeah.
But they've been there for 5 years.
Yeah.
So what's being proposed is a multiplier based on longevity.
Oh.
And so if you're there from 0 to 5 years, you would get 2% above and you get one or the other, you don't get both.
Yeah.
You get what's most beneficial to you, but that goes all the way up to 10% if you're there for 20 years. So they did try to, this is all from the Office of Personnel Management, but they did try to put something in the plan that would take care of employees that have been there for some time where they're not making the same as a person who started last week.
Yeah, that I had that experience at Pulaski County when I was a trial judge over there with staff and trying to meet the private market, but yet having people who had been there making about the same amount that a start person would. So now my next question would be, how does this impact the budget?
I don't know the overall cost of the payroll that you're looking at. I can't imagine that it's going to impact it significantly. I can tell you for every $80 million, mm-hmm. it impacts the budget about 1%.
Okay.
I have no idea what type of increases you're talking about or what your payroll might be if you're looking, but that's a significant amount. We've tried in the past to keep the budget around 3% growth. We don't think we'll be able to do it this time, to be honest, because of the inflationary pressures, education especially. I'm sure many of you have seen the teacher salary issues has been in the paper quite a bit. And so because of those pressures, we're looking at probably, I don't think we'll be able to keep it at 3%,
yeah.
Put it that way. I think if we can probably keep it at 5%, we're going to be doing
well,
pretty good. I mean, it's my hope to keep it at 3. I think I'm losing that argument. So.
Let me just, one last question, and then I'll tender to the other commissioners. I guess my question, though, is the personnel committee's proposal, how will that affect the budget?
The projections are that it would cost $41 million.
Okay.
And that's for all the state employees. And keep in mind that that's general revenue.
Yeah.
Roughly 35% of the state employees are on other types of income, whether it's special revenues, federal revenues. But for the general revenue side of that, you're looking at roughly $41 million.
Thank you. Okay. Tommy?
The grade increase that we're talking about, the 20%, so basically you've got a beginning, a midpoint, and an ending point. usually the 20% increase in the grade or the range is meant to get us in line with where other states or other groups may be in your comparisons. But what about performance? Is there a performance evaluation that will impact that that increase, or is it just automatic based on tenure?
The grade, the table would be automatic. If you were making less, and if we use just the example of a $30,000 minimum for a particular grade, and it goes up to 20%, everybody in that grade would make at least $36,000. That 20% would. Now, on top of that, then you would have your performance evaluations at the end of the year. The way for state employees, that's done near the end of the year and is factored in so that their performance raises can take effect on July 1st. And so there will still be that type of enhancement as well. Roughly, that's typically been around 3%. I don't recall another time of it being 5% the way it was this year. Again, I think that was because of the pressures that have been placed on trying to retain state employees. So Governor Hutchinson decided on the 2% COLA. That's the maximum he could do in any one fiscal year. And then he did a 5% for the performance evaluations on average. Some people, depending on your performance, and it's up to the different agencies, some people might have gotten nothing, some people might have gotten 2%, some got 5, some could have gotten 10. It's up to the agency to disperse that, but the idea is that they would stay at that 5% cap for the whole agency.
When was the last grade adjustment?
2017.
And how much was that?
That I don't recall. I don't think it was as much as we're talking about now. There was one previous to that I can recall. I'm just going off memory, but it seems like those were closer to probably 10%. 20% is significant, but I think it's just because of the inflationary pressures and the retention issues in state government at the moment. That's why that's been looked at. And I'm told that just gets us to where we need to be. It's not as if that's going to give some kind of cushion for future growth. That's to put us where we need to be today. And it was accepted fairly well by the Personnel Committee, but of course all that will have to be voted on during the next session, and you know, we're unsure, of course, how that will turn out.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commissioners? Please feel free. I could go on and ask questions, but we've gotten some information on inflation figures, and it looks to me like in the stats that we're at 8% in that range.
Yeah, I think that's close. I've heard different numbers, 8.2, 8.6.
Yeah.
I think Social Security, I think right. their increases are in the low 8s, 8.2.
Right. Seven.
Yeah. You're wrong about that, but it's close, yes.
That's pretty high for Social Security to
do. I think it's the largest increase since maybe 1980 or sometime in that time frame. There were only a couple of other times where it's been that large.
I also noticed that in your handouts, there was an impact statement where for a Senate bill and a House bill, one. Are those the cuts that you just referred to, or are those new ones that will be on the table in January?
Well, the one that one tax cut that was passed will go into effect on January 1st.
Okay.
The corporate tax will drop to 5.3% on January 1st, 2023. What they did with the personal income tax is actually that was made retroactive back to the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so the impact on the personal income side of tax, which went down to 4.9%. And keep in mind, those tax decreases were built in they were to happen periodically, where they would step down, what they decided to do was just accelerate those cuts directly to 4.9. It would have taken until, I think it was 2026.
Yeah.
We would have finally got to 4.9% on the personal side, but the decision was made to accelerate those tax cuts and make them all effective immediately, with the exception of corporate, which will go into effect on January 1st of next year.
So that was Senate Bill 1?
Yes, there was a Senate bill and a House bill.
Well, I think the House bill was 2025. It looked to me like they were a little bit different. They may have come together.
May have. Typically, when they do something like that, they'll actually file identical bills in each house, just so nobody can throw a wrench in at the end. Both houses pass their version; it goes to the other, and even if one side backs out, you can go forward.
You can go. That's great.
But they should have. I believe they were identical, at least the ones that dealt with the tax cuts.
Okay. Well. I will admit to you, I don't keep up with all of that as religiously as I used to. In these tax impact statements, I noticed that on down the line, we're going to be in a minus situation.
Well, I don't know that. Yeah. We did projections because of the tax cuts and because of accelerating those tax cuts. Dr. Shelnut and his group did projections further out than they normally would.
Okay.
Typically, they would only do a forecast for the current 2 years. But because of the tax cuts and because of accelerating those, he did take those out a little bit further than normal. Of course, I think he was, they try to do those forecasts rather conservatively.
Sure.
I think the idea is, if you're low on the forecast, people aren't too upset when you have more money. And if the forecast is too high and we start cutting services and personnel and budgets, that's much more severe. So I think he was a little conservative going out past the biennium.
Yeah.
But we felt like we would not be in the negative.
Okay.
Within the current forecast for the foreseeable future. Of course, that's that depends on spending as well. And when we did forecasting on revenues, we also built in a 3% increase on the budget, and it looks like we're going to be above that this year.
Okay.
So all that has an impact. If you have $1 billion surplus and you cut $500 million in taxes and you raise $500 million in spending, it doesn't take much of a math genius to figure out your surplus is gone.
Your surplus is gone. I'm interested in, now that with these tax cuts, in the current biennium, have we been able to fund B and C of the budget?
Yeah, so actually in the current FY23 budget, we only did two categories,
okay.
A and B,
okay.
And one of the reasons was we knew there wasn't a reason to have a category C and D because everybody was going to be funded.
Okay.
Of course, nobody wants to be in category B, C, or D.
Right.
And just for those who don't understand how the state budget works, when the budget is done, and at least for the Revenue Stabilization Act and that portion of it, if you're in category A, as the money comes in daily, that money is distributed. You get your percentage of the money as it comes in daily. It's dispersed out to fund that category. So education, for instance, gets 41% of the budget. So if a dollar comes in, 41 cents goes to education. Nothing goes to, if you're in the B category, nothing goes to you until the entire A category is funded. So A category may not be funded in a typical year until May or June, and so you wouldn't get your category B funding until the end of the year. Once category A is fully funded, then you get your pro rata share of category B until it's completely funded, then you go to category C. So just so Yeah. In case nobody knows how that works.
So for this biennium, though, A and B have been fully funded?
Well, they won't be fully funded until the money comes in.
Yeah.
But we fully expect them to be fully funded easily, and along with at least a $400 million surplus.
Okay.
Could you tell us a little bit about who would be in those category B and C?
Well, I'm not sure because I don't know who the B is, what's in A and what's in B. Do you have a general idea?
Yeah. If you're talking about your particular, where your money's coming from, that's typically not within those categories. Your money's going to come out of the Constitutional Officers Fund or the Central Services Fund. So that's a little bit different, a little separate. But we generally talk about the RSA, or the Revenue Stabilization Act, the most. But your particular salaries, as far as I know, and if you're talking about judges, prosecutors, legislators, those are out of different funds.
Okay.
But they still impact all the state.
The budget.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Now I'd like to ask Dr. Graves from the Administrative Office of the Courts. Thank you. Dr. Graves, obviously, if you want to come, you have handouts?
I do, yeah.
Okay. Please have a seat. And Dr. Graves, we have been given some of the Arkansas court statistics.
Yes, ma'am.
And is this an update or?
This is additional information. Mm-hmm. I believe after the September meeting, you requested disposition data from the circuit courts.
Yeah.
This is a much sort of more aggregate collection and a little bit of history as well, with figures back to 2016. But there are summaries for each court level for the last several years, filings and dispositions, as well as the clearance rate, which is the number of dispositions per filing for a given time period, in this case, the years in question.
Well, I really appreciate you doing this because I was trying to make some sense out of what I'm going to call the detail stuff, and it was a little difficult because I couldn't tell. I don't know if in those submissions that you had filings, the stats.
No, the filings were not included in those figures. It's just the dispositions.
Okay. Well, this is very good because I was going to ask questions to try to get to this point. Obviously, we know that 2021 got impacted by COVID. I presume that was what caused some of the reduction.
Yeah, 2021 certainly saw some COVID effects. 2020 more so. As you can see, particularly in the circuit court, clearance rate drops below 90%, which is unusual, historically speaking. Since 2020, you see 2021, and then the 2022 estimate is the filings and disposition totals are estimates of the full year, assuming that the number of filings and dispositions per day up to this point in the year continue for the rest of the year. Those will be the number of cases filed and disposed. And then the clearance rate is dispositions over filings. And that's the 95.7% figure is based on current to date. Because if the rates remain the same, then the clearance rate won't change.
Right.
Now, I would note that so far over the course of the year, the assumption that dispositions and filings are both produced at the same rate per day has not proven to be the case.
Yes.
In fact, dispositions have grown faster than filings over the last 4 months. I did an estimate back in June. And so, at least based on that, My guess is that the clearance rate for the circuit courts will come up over, come up a little bit higher, and quite possibly district courts as well.
Okay, good, because obviously in the district court dispositions, we don't, we have the impact of the, in 2020 and 2021 of COVID.
Yes.
And we don't have 2022 estimates.
No, yeah, about half of the district courts report by paper. So there's a lag, and the lag is inconsistent. So for some courts, I may have 8 months of data, for some six. And it's very difficult to make an estimate based on, you know, all the departments and divisions not knowing how much of the year you have for each one, or having to do each by hand, basically. So I wasn't able to make a 2022 mm-hmm. calculation or estimate.
Well, I noticed that in the Court of Appeals, filings went down in 2020, well, actually 2018 through 20, and then they've ratcheted up again in 2021. But filings have gone down considerably in the Supreme Court, from in the 400s down, at least for 2021, to 149. Do you know if in 2022 whether they're going back up?
I don't know. I haven't. Okay. I haven't looked at that yet. For the appeals courts, filings and dispositions are highly nonlinear, which means that you know the one portion of the year might be very fallow, might be very very low, and then a bunch of activity happens, particularly in the latter part of the year when the session is in.
Well, and when there's an election year.
Yeah.
So I understand that, because it ranges all over the place.
There's also likely some effect that the slowdown in filings and dispositions a year or two ago have some lagged effects on the appeals, because the cases have to be there in order for them to be heard.
We have to wait. There's a gap.
Right.
For things to get transcribed and get filed.
Right.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you giving us this kind of statistic, because, like I say, I couldn't have figured it out from what we had before. Now, we were also given some national figures. That was on a link. I copied it. Let me see if I have it here. Oh, here it is. The National Center for State Courts. And I'm looking at Arkansas, and it's ranked for the Supreme Court as 25. Kind of middle. And likewise, the Intermediate Appellate Court, 20, and the General Jurisdiction Court, 20. What's interesting to me, and of course, I don't know how they do this adjusted for cost of living, since things have changed so much with inflation. How they could determine where our general jurisdiction court is at this moment in time. It's always a picture.
Sure, it's a moving target.
Yeah. So I guess I'm not quite as looking at that figure, because it's not going to really be reflective of the current situation.
And I believe those figures are from July.
So this is way back.
This might have been a lifetime ago.
Well, I don't have any other questions. Does anybody else? I don't like to hog the question.
This tape is pretty self-explanatory.
It's very explanatory. I would encourage us to have this at other, when we meet again, because this really helps us understand the work the actual work that's being done as opposed to how we rank with other states.
Certainly, easily done.
Okay, thank you. The wonders of computers. Well, I'm going to tell you, I started in the court system at a time when we had no statistics. And of course, I'm always complimentary of our former executive director and Marty now of pushing all of the judicial circuits to send in their statistics. And of course, to have a standard way of counting cases. We had those great debates in the juvenile justice system, the review hearings, blah, blah, blah. I won't raise those nightmares anymore. But that whole issue of a standard counting. I guess, since I do have a public podium, I would like to urge the district courts to see if we can't get a little better handle on statistics. And I know, but most of the district courts are now going to be, the judge is going to be a state employee.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that was coming, what, are we at that place now? 2020, I can't remember when the last round of full-time district judges. Can you say?
That's what I thought.
Okay. 25, okay. So that will help on that side.
Yes, we had a number of courts transition from local to state judges in the recent past, but we've also had a number of courts within the last year transition from being those paper reporting courts who send in their information on an aggregate basis on a month, monthly one, fax or something like that, to reporting in the case management system electronically. So
it's getting better in terms of the numbers.
Yes, it is. We've come really far very quickly.
Well, of course, I know where credit is due to all the work of trying to get us online and with data processing. It's like any statistic, you can massage it.
Mm-hmm. To some extent.
Yeah. But this is excellent information for us. Thank you very much,
Doctor.
Appreciate it. I think if there are no other questions, you're excused.
Thank you very much.
I think we are now at the place on our, before I go to our discussion on the request, I want to ask, is there any other person present representing a constituency that would like to make a statement? Okay. I just didn't want to assume anything. I'm going to now present and have an open, encourage an open discussion about our reviewing the request which has been made by the Judicial Council, by the Supreme Court, for all courts, and that includes the Prosecuting Attorney's Office. That is automatic. We don't have to discuss them separately because they come in at a percentage. Those are the only requests we've had. Now, in the arguments made in support of the request, I think I can read them as 1-2% cost of living based upon what Governor Hutchinson did in February. And then an additional 5% based upon what Governor Hutchinson did in May. But that was an interesting way of using budget for merit raises for department agencies to allot merit raises up to 5%. Well, anyway, within their budget, probably also indirectly to deal with cost of living. But I think what we've heard is that that was just kind of a temporary thing to deal with what we heard from Mr. Brecht about personnel across, you know, and where we stand. This gaposis that happens many times in government between the private market rates and government, we had happen in the judiciary several years ago, where we had to do some, I think on this commission, where we had to do some, if you recall, some really drastic raises because we were out of sync. So I'm just going to open up the discussion and ask if there's any comments, questions, or views, opinions.
I mean, my opinion is the request is easily justified. I mean, it's you know, in the private sector, and you know, these adjustments have been made due to inflation and everything else increasing around us. So, I mean, I certainly believe it's justified.
Would you like to make that a motion?
Yes.
Okay. I will entertain a second.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, based on what the governor did with the 2% COLA and then the 5%, obviously he gave the 5% the discretion of the department heads, but, you know, that really doesn't apply here, so I would second the motion for just the 2 plus the 5 for all of it.
Any discussion of the motion as seconded? Wow. This is unusual, because usually we've had a lot more discussion. Yes.
Philip Fletcher, I'd like to, there's an employer, I gave my folks 5%.
Yeah.
With the consideration that, you know, we may see some things come back down.
Right.
You know, hopefully.
Hopefully.
So, 7% is a pretty good raise. More than my folks got, more than some of the banks. I checked with some of the bank employers, and I'm a little more reserved on 7% than most people. So,
Well, thank you
just
for
thought in my statement.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Anything else, Tommy?
I would agree with Mr. Fletcher, and that the part I get concerned about, and I'm not, you know, I'm not opposed to just what I get concerned about is what's down the road, and once you're up, you don't go down. You know? So this down the road is a bigger issue in mine. You know, that's based on my career in banking, looking back at recessions, we never looked at anything exactly like we're looking at right now, and I'm not trying to compare that to 80, I'm just simply saying that on the horizon, there are some real challenges there. And a 7% increase is, you know, probably 300 basis points more than you're seeing in the banking industry. So I'll just throw that out. And like I say, my issue is not what we're looking at today. My issue is what we're going to be looking at in the not too distant future, and there's no taking back, you know, it's only going one way.
Opinion.
Yes.
But, you know, in talent retention is very important and very difficult, and, you know, for those talented employees or judges or personnel that we have, I would say the wages are probably somewhat depressed anyway. And, you know, I think although 7% sounds big on the grand scheme of things, when you're already behind, then 7% is not that much. So, again, I mean, we've been talking about surpluses for the last several years, so we can't say the money's not there. I mean, so.
Yeah, I think I take it back to, as a private employer, also, you know, sometimes the percentage, obviously we're talking about percentage with this group of people, but for us in the past year, in order to get new people in order to have it be a job where they want to do it, we've had to raise our starting wage 25%.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then that translates all the way through the ranks. Yeah. And then bonuses and things
like that on
top
Mr.
of that.
Brett
so,
was talking about.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously we're talking about a different group of people here, right? But to get people that want to aspire to be, you know, attorneys and judges and do those things, that's one of the reasons I just look at it the same way. I agree with what Philip said, and I agree with what you said, Tommy. But in it, you know, it is a unique time, right? I don't think we've ever. In my career, we haven't given raises like that, right? Usually it's 1-3%. But it is a unique year. So I'm good with whatever the commission decides. Mm-hmm. That's just from my perspective, I wanted to give you that also.
Mr. Gwynn, any thoughts?
We've had to pay dearly for employees.
Okay.
We've had to pay dearly for employees in my business, and I agree with Tommy. I think we got a rough sliding. I think it may be 6, 8, 9 months, and but you know, to get people to work now, or in my business, we're paying a lot more,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure we're in your category. So since you can't take, I'm kind of like a banana, I'm with the bunch, but I don't know the answer.
Yes.
I have one more observation. Again, I too agree with every one of you. I'm basing this on the assumption that last year, you know, we spent a lot of time looking at where we were versus where a broader market was, and you know, I can't remember seven state area where all we looked at, but so I'm basing my issue on the assumption that we moved those positions to those competitive levels then.
Well, I will say, as a former member of the judiciary, I am aware that you were talking about recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
I am aware that encouraging people to run for judgeships is difficult. And obviously there are other difficulties other than just the money, but in terms of the private practice and the credentials of someone who would be a good temperament as a judge, and what I'm going to say, have the necessary experience in the field, in the practice of law, sometimes these folks in different age groups look at this and say, you know, I'm putting kids through college, and I can't afford to take a decrease in my salary that I get in the private practice of law. Some of us make, and I will say I did, I made a decision to take a decrease. I knew I would, because my mother had already set up a trust fund for my son for college. I mean, you know, everybody has a different position, but some of us are called to public service and we take the cut and go on. But for the four the purposes of this discussion, what you were talking about, happens also, where someone has to look at their situation and what cut they can afford to take. Because they will be taking a cut. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to tell you right now, they will be taking a cut. This is not a step up. It's a step back. If they have the experience and the qualifications necessary to take the bench. So I just wanted to throw that out for purposes of this particular group and based on my experience.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to add that I so much appreciate Dr. Graves' report today. Mm-hmm. This is the best piece of information that, as long as I've been on this commission, yeah, we've ever received. And it shows clearly the hard work of our courts throughout the state. And when you look at the depositions and the clearance rate, that's pretty incredible, given the situations that we've had, having some courts that have not been able to post their filings online. And I hope that we can certainly move to a more consistent degree of reporting. But I do agree with everything that you've stated and said, because our judiciary is knocking it out, in my opinion. And that's one thing as an Arkansan I really appreciate, and seeing the effectiveness of our courts. So I'd like to say thank you.
Well, I will say that many times lawyers from other states will come to our courts, and they will be absolutely shocked at how fast we move.
It's amazing.
They're used to delays, and our judges say, no, that's not happening here. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of them as well. Well, any further discussion? Yes.
I would like to say that I do respect everybody's views. I do have a lot of respect for our judges, and I know they give a lot of their personal time. They give up a lot being a judge, and their, you know, what they can and can't do in the public.
Right.
I've got several friends that are judges, and I get picked on that's a lot. Anyway, we do represent the people of the state.
Yeah. That's right.
And we need to be concerned about what we do. It's easy to give a raise, but you know, if things change and the economy has some sort of crash, which we've already seen, very good possibility, you can never ask for any money back.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't want to rubber stamp every request that's made. And I apologize for offending anybody, but and back what you said. Nathan, on the employees, you know, we're having to pay it to get more people. But as an employer, I've got about 100 employees. And I find myself answering to them today instead of them answering to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is...
That's because of the job market.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
the job market right now
is... still not right.
Yeah.
You know, the right and wrong comes in play.
Yeah.
You know, and respect for your employer.
Yeah.
And in respect for your people, so
it's a balance.
That's the only thing I'd say. You know, we do represent the people. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes our personal views. We need to think about what's going on, what other folks are doing. I know on the state employees. I know they are. You take somebody making $30,000 a year. That's a hard way to make a living. You know.
Yeah.
That's a hard way to provide for your family, and I hate it. You know, I make more than a lot of folks anyway. But this is a worthless story.
That's okay.
Okay, I went to Walmart the other day, and I looked down an aisle, and one of my employees was down there with his wife, and this guy makes like. We're in a construction business.
Yeah.
He makes like $24 an hour. They were down there looking at some little deal, and they were deciding if this one was 4 cents, but more than this one. You know, and I had to step back and think about that and appreciate the fact that I don't do that. I go in and try to find what I want, what I need, and I'm out of there. But anyway, I don't want to sound like the person in here that's always a little negative, but.
Yeah.
I think we always have to be aware that we do represent the people,
mm-hmm.
and it is hard to account for a judge because they do give up a lot of personal and where they can and can't go, you know. Anyway, that's all I've got to say. A lot of worthless information, but
thank you.
That was good.
No, it was
very good, Philip.
Very good, Philip. Anything, any further discussion? My lawyer, Mr. House, so you're the lawyer for the state, pointed out that we have really two different kind of motions going on, and I want to be clear on what the motion actually is. We can have a motion for 2% and then 5%, which you understand compounds, or we can have a motion for 7% and there's no compounding. So I would like to clarify that, Mr. Smith, and
the motion was 2 and 5.
Okay. So the motion as seconded is 2 and then 5, so there would be compounding with that motion. I'm going to call a vote on that motion. All in favor of the motion as seconded, please raise your hand. Okay, that's all except one. All opposed to that motion, please raise your hand. One opposed. I'm going to declare that the motion passes. And then from that, we will have to work with the auditor's office about the resolution and the drafting of the resolution. So we will have to have a meeting to pass the resolution, as I recall. Is that right, Doug? So I guess what I'd like to know is, I can't remember if we came together to pass the resolution physically or if we did it by email. I don't remember.
I think we did it by email.
Yeah. Because it's basically putting into the correct verbiage for...
Yes, ma'am. You need to specify the salaries, not what the raises. What you just did is specify how to compute the salaries.
How to compute, and then that gets computed, and then the resolution. So what I propose is that we do have the resolution drafted, sent by email, and made public to all the commissioners. And then the commissioners can individually indicate their approval or disapproval. Is there a problem with that? No, I'm looking at
the opportunity for public comment. Yeah, 45 days.
And so that would mean that the raise would not be effective until after the resolution is passed, I mean, is approved. And I believe each of us has to sign that resolution.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm looking at my old files. Let me go back to last year. Here. Yeah, it I'll just give you an example. It looks like this, and it has figures on it. And we sign it. Okay? So that will be how the resolution will be circulated by email. You can sign it and then scan it and send it back to the office.
And I misspoke. It's not more than 45 days. Okay. Comment is how.
Oh, not more than 45 days. So
is there a minimum? I think last time it was like two. I think last time it was like 2 weeks or
14 days. 14 days. We'll have comment 14 days.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm Mike Wickline. I'm with the Democratic Gazette.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, the way that you guys are explaining this, you would accept public comment and you would just merely sign a document to approve? You wouldn't come back to a meeting to approve the resolution? Has that been done before here?
Yes.
Is that, I mean, that's just generally not the way public bodies work. And so is that, I mean, how is that appropriate?
Well,
if a city council did the same thing or a form of work did the same thing, people would raise some questions about it.
Well, what I see in this, and like I say, I'm just a private citizen, okay?
On a public body.
Yeah, but a chair of a public body.
Right.
And what I see is we have made the decision already. These are the figures that have been calculated from our decision. These figures flow from the decision we've made.
So you don't care about public comment?
Yes, you do. It could be final after the public comment if you decide.
That was the process, so
yeah.
Was you were
there will be a public comment period.
But nobody will be able to show up, just the people will just put in things in writing?
Let's just have a meeting.
I would prefer just to have a meeting so we don't have this great debate. So let's set a meeting, and I guess the question, Donna, is how long would it take for this calculation to be done?
I have to check. I have no idea.
Let's see. What I want to do is set a meeting date, and we can set it out so that there's plenty of time for that process. And let's see, November, we are here on the 28th. How about November the 11th?
Yes.
2 weeks.
Well,
now that's Veterans Day.
We should give them 2 weeks to comment after it's published, right?
Right. So we need to go November 18, probably. Friday, November
18.
How does that look for each of our members?
What day?
November 18th.
Okay.
It's a Friday at 10 o'clock.
I may be able to come.
Can we do it to the week before? We're dedicating the Arkansas State Police Foundation. We built a driving track and two buildings, and the governor's going to be there on the 17th.
Uh-huh.
Whatever, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, we can set a different time if you'd like, but we've normally done it at 10 o'clock in the morning. And what we will do is have the draft for public comment 10 days before. That'll work.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
That's in the plan.
Okay. So, does that work for you, Tommy?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
As long as we do it at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say it would last over 30 minutes at the most. So, November the 18th. Okay. Okay, so we'll need this room, etc. And if you will have the, You have access to these prior ones, don't you?
I'm sure I do.
Yeah, you have access to the prior ones, so you can look at that and see how to, but that calculation is, I don't know who does that calculation.
I'll just have to give somebody.
Yeah, who does the calculation for, and remember this is 2% and then compounded to 5%. So that will be, we will move forward and do that so that there's no debate about whether it's done properly or not.
Oh, once the calculation's done, I'll prepare an appropriate notice.
Okay.
And present it to you for your signature. It'll be published, and written comments can be provided if they choose.
Or they can come to the meeting.
Or they can come on the 18th at 10 a.m.
Right, right.
So, you can do that.
Okay. Let's see. Before we adjourn, I'd like to bring up, this will be our next meeting date, so we'll just leave it at that. And any comments or new business or old business that you want to bring to the group? If not, I will adjourn the meeting at 11:09. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I've been a lot of things, so, you know.
Why would they create a public comment period if they weren't going to?